27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and 27 will just be very, very brief. Sunday we'll start the book of 2 Samuel. In the first 27 chapters, we've met quite a few people that are interesting. Hannah, Eli, Samuel, Saul, David, Goliath, Jonathan. We've seen Saul change from being a pretty humble person who is anointed king to being a self-willed man who ignores God's instructions and is rejected by the Lord as king. We've seen David as a very young man who used a sling to kill Goliath, a very capable warrior. And David becomes a capable warrior and leader and is anointed the successor to Saul. We've seen the Philistines be a constant enemy of Israel, and we've seen Saul be so envious of David that he tries several times to kill him, and David becomes a fugitive on the run with 600 people supporting him. In our last class, we looked at some of David's escapes. In chapters 24 and 26, David certainly had the opportunity to kill Saul, but did not do that because David said, Saul is God's anointed, and who am I to do that? And we saw Saul admit in verse 21 of chapter 26 that he had sinned against David. Finally, in chapter 27, we saw that David realized the only way he could really be safe from Saul trying to kill him was to go to the land of the enemy, the Philistines, and that's where he was going to live. So in Philistia, David and his men earned the trust of Achish of Gath, Goliath's hometown, as Grant. Thank you. There are daily emails, it seems. A lot of emails going between Grant and I. And I forgot his name. David and his men went to Achish, Goliath's hometown, as Grant has told me after class on Sunday, reminded me, and Achish gave the town of Ziklag to David and his men. Over the 16 months that David spent in Philistia, David convinced Achish that he was attacking the interest of Israel and is loyal to Achish, while David really is attacking Israel's enemies and finding ways to share part of what he takes from his raids with the people in Israel. So tonight, if I can hit the right buttons, we're going to start on the 28th chapter. And in the final chapters of 1 Samuel, we will see the Philistines gather for war. Saul is afraid and seeks advice from a medium at Endor. In chapter 29, the Philistines are at Aphek. Israel is at Jezreel. David offers to fight with Achish and is turned down. In chapter 30, David's home of Ziklag is raided by the Amalekites, and David pursues them. And then in chapter 31, King Saul and his sons die. So as we begin to look at chapter 28, the time is about 1010 B.C., and the Philistines are gathering their troops so they can move north along the coastal plain to the valley of Jezreel, and then they'll move east to face the troops of Saul. David is still working for Achish, the Philistine, and Achish says David will go to war with him against Israel. David is in an awkward position and can't really refuse and agrees to fight with Achish, king of the city of Gath. Achish trusts David so much that he says David will have a position of great trust and respect and honor as the royal bodyguard. As we look at verses 3 and 4, three statements explain the current circumstances for Saul. First, we once again read that Samuel is dead. This means that Saul does not have a spiritual counselor, an advisor to whom he can turn. Secondly, we read that Saul has removed the mediums and spiritists from the land. This means that he complied with the Mosaic law, which in Leviticus 19:31 and 20:27 and Deuteronomy the 18th chapter 19:9-14 condemned mediums and spiritists. This also means he can't draw any comfort from those false sources, sinful sources, pagan sources of learning. The third major influence was the Philistines are nearby. They're camped at Shunem, a little town in the valley of Jezreel, and Saul has gathered his troops near Gilboa. As we look at verses 5 and following, 5 to 7, the Philistines are camped at Shunem, according to this, 7 miles east of Megiddo in the valley of Jezreel. The Israelites are camped just across the valley and on the slopes of Mount Gilboa. Saul's reaction is fear so great that it says his heart trembled greatly. We remember Samuel is dead. Saul does not have a spiritual advisor. Saul decides to pray to God, but God does not answer him by any of the usual means of dreams or priestly oracle or by prophets. So, in verse 7, as a result, Saul is desperate and resorts to necromancy. When it says in verse 7, and we're going to talk about that word. When it says in verse 7, then Paul said to his servants, seek for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, behold, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. A moment ago, I said the Mosaic law condemned mediums and spiritists. Consulting the dead is called necromancy. God did not approve of this practice. In Leviticus 19:31, you'll see on the slide, do not turn to mediums or spiritists. In Leviticus 20, verse 27, it says, now a man or a woman who is a medium or a spiritist shall surely be put to death. In Deuteronomy, the 18th chapter, verses 10 to 14, I guess, it says, there shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who casts a spell, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. For whoever does these things is detestable to the Lord. The point is, these practices are nothing but magical or secret arts which are destructive in trusting God. Today we have people who focus on astrology and horoscopes, neither of which are realistically beneficial. God's people do not need to consult the stars or fortune tellers or Ouija boards or gypsies or black magic today. Those things aren't going to provide us any guidance. This is relevant today because we see those practices exist. You'll see, horoscopes in the newspaper. If you ever get one delivered, we seem to have a problem with that. And the last verse on the screen is from Isaiah 8, verse 19. Should not a people consult their God? I would say to you, the true God is all we need. Since God did not answer Saul in verse 7, Saul now tells his servants to find a medium. And they say they can find one at Endor. In verse 8 to 11, Saul disguises himself, perhaps to avoid any Philistine scout from recognizing him. That's speculation on my part. And because people knew mediums were outlawed. We just read from Leviticus and Deuteronomy and so on. Mediums were outlawed, and when he goes to this woman, she would not do as he asked if she knew it was Saul, because Saul's the one that outlawed him. And or complied with the Mosaic law and did away with them. So together with a couple of men, they go to this woman at Endor, and Saul asked for a person to be brought up. They said, you put them in the ground, so to call that spirit back up, you got to bring them up. The woman is hesitant because she knows King Saul has banned mediums and spiritists, and she could lose her life by practicing this magical art. Saul promises nothing's going to happen. And so far, his disguise is working. But then he says who he wants to see. He says he wants to see Samuel. So, in verses 12 to 16, when the woman did as he asked, she made that request, and she calls out. And as we look at verses 12 to 16, let me first say, commentators have traditionally taken three positions on these verses, saying there was no real appearance of Samuel, it was merely a delusion, or Samuel truly appeared. As we look at these verses, they truly present a singular, unique event in which there's nothing else like it in the Bible. I suggest each of us has to form our own opinion. For now, given the woman's surprise that you're going to see in verse 12 and the knowledge she displays of Saul and Samuel's relationship with God in verses 14 to 18 and her forward-looking comments in verse 19, I believe our all-wise, our all-powerful God held and still holds the power for his own special reasons to cause Samuel to appear and provide the knowledge given to her. Otherwise, I don't believe God would have allowed this passage in the Bible. So, in verses 12 to 16, when the medium sees Samuel, she appears surprised. She recognizes the tall man because you'll go back a few chapters and you know that Saul had a certain appearance. She recognizes the tall man as Saul, and the medium presents Saul information on what she sees as to age and dress, and it's sufficient for Saul to know it is Samuel, and he bows before Samuel. Samuel asks, "Why'd you disturb me?" Saul responds by saying, "The Philistines are attacking. God will not answer me when I pray to him." And Saul says he's called Samuel to tell him what to do because, frankly, Saul is clueless. Samuel is blunt, and he asks Saul why he would bother Samuel if God is hostile toward him. Given that Samuel lived a life serving God, how can Saul expect an answer from Samuel? In verse 17 to 19, Samuel says, "The Lord has done accordingly as he spoke through me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, to David." Samuel gives two reasons this is true when he makes perhaps a political judgment, saying, 1 Samuel 15:26, you did not obey the Lord, and secondly, you did not execute his fierce wrath on Amalek, so the Lord has done this thing to you today. Now that's why Saul is being rejected. And then he makes the comment that, and you, well, you'll remember 1 Samuel 15:3, Saul had been told to not just kill all the Amalekites, but both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey, all the Amalekites. And you'll remember he didn't do that. Those actions led Samuel to anoint David in 1 Samuel 16:13. Then God had Samuel speak a military judgment, saying the Philistines would defeat the Israelites in battle. Finally, Samuel speaks of the personal consequences for Saul, saying both Saul and Saul's sons are going to die in battle and join Samuel in the realm of the dead. Again, I think this is a unique passage, and truly God has the ability and power to accomplish what we're studying in order to accomplish his purposes, and has placed this unique passage in the scriptures intentionally. Before going on, let me say also, once again, we have people today who focus on astrology and horoscopes, and none of that's beneficial. God's people don't need to consult the stars and fortune tellers and the magical arts to find the guidance that God wants us to have. Any comments on these verses? Kenny? as you look at Saul and David, it's interesting how they react to their sin. The way Grant and I have divided the material, I've been looking at the 7th through the 12th chapters of 2 Samuel. And in one of those passages, when challenged because of his actions, David says, "I have sinned." There were consequences, but David acknowledged his sin. Saul was focused more on himself and his needs. As we look at the next slide, filled with hunger for not having eaten in many hours and fear from the comments of this medium, Saul falls on the ground. Having done what Saul asked, this medium of Endor sees Saul on the ground and tries to comfort him and tells him he needs to eat and gain strength before he leaves. And Saul initially refuses to eat. It says in verse 20, "For he had eaten no food all day and all night." Finally, it says the woman had a fattened calf, and she prepared that and took some flour and baked some unleavened bread, and in verse 25, brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate and arose and went away. As we go to the 29th chapter now, the Philistines are gathered together. All their armies are at Aphek. Israel is at Jezreel. It's starting to get real. The battle lines are forming. And in verse 2, "And the lords of the Philistines were proceeding on by hundreds and by thousands." There were quite a few people representing the Philistines. And this is a tough time for the Israelites. Remember, David and his men were serving as the royal bodyguard for Achish, and they're coming up to the battle as well. Now, the Philistines were gathered, and in this point, we see the Philistine commanders do not have any confidence in David and his men. They want him sent back to Ziklag. You know, that's where David's living. And King Achish of Gath argues that David, who was once the servant of Saul, has faithfully served him for a long time. And that's true. You know, 16 months, David, the scriptures say that David was in the area. And he's pleased Achish. So King Achish of Gath argues that David, who was once the servant of Saul, has faithfully served him. In verse 3, they say, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or rather these years, and I found no fault in him from the day he deserted to me to this day?" You know, Achish is taking up for David. The Philistine commanders don't care what Achish is saying. They angrily insist that David be gone because they don't want to be in the middle of a battle and have a warrior like David and his 600 men turn against them from the rear or from the side or in any direction and start killing them. They say, "Make the man go back that he may return to his place where you have assigned him, and do let him go down. Do not let him go down to battle with us, or in the battle he may become an adversary to us." And then they remind Achish, using the comment that irritated Saul, if you remember, "Saul has slain his thousands, David is 10,000. Is this not David of whom they sing this in the dances?" So the Philistine commanders are rather adamant about what's going on. In verse 6, Achish calls David and praises David for his services, saying, "As the Lord lives, you've been upright, and your going out and your coming in with me in the army are pleasing in my sight. For I have not found evil in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, you are not pleasing in the sight of the Lord. Now therefore return and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Now if David wanted to hear some reasoning why he's being sent home, Achish at least tells him, it's not me, Achish, that's sending you home. You have been faithful, as far as I'm concerned, in serving me. So what we see happening is in verse 8, David said to Achish, but what have I done? And what have you found in your servant from the day when I came before you to this day, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? So what does David say? David says, I'm innocent. Where have I been lacking in service to you, King Achish? I've served you faithfully. So in verse 9, but Achish replied to David, I know that you're pleasing in my sight, like an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said, he must not go up with us to the battle. Achish agrees that David has done what Achish requested and has served him faithfully. But Achish can't overrule the Philistine commanders. They've insisted that David leave, and David and his men must leave the next morning. As we see in verse 11, David arose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So the battle is going to happen. But David, a warrior of Israel, not trusted by the Philistines, trusted by Achish of Gath, but not by the Philistine leaders, is not going to be a party to it. I'm going to stop there. What comments do you have in through 29? Well, as we get to chapter 30, while David and his men have been with Achish as the Philistines have been traveling north to battle the Israelites, those pesky Amalekites have attacked his home. Do you remember what we read a few minutes ago, or what I said? I don't remember which. What was Saul told to do to the Amalekites? Utterly destroy man, woman, child, beast. Apparently he didn't do his job well, did he? Because there are some still living. So the Amalekites come and burn the city. And they take the women and the children and everything they can lay their hands on, basically. Happily, they did not kill anyone. But they did take everything that was movable. It happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had made a raid on the Negev and on Ziklag and overthrown Ziklag and burned it with fire. And they took captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great, without killing anyone, and carried them off and went their way. Then David and his men came to the city. Behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. Then look at verse 4. When David and his men reached Ziklag and realize what has happened, they're distraught. They're overcome. They've cried a river of tears till they can't cry anymore. They don't have any strength to cry any longer. David's family's was not spared because his current wives are taken captive. Even worse for David, what are the men talking about doing? Stoning him. That's right. Moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him. For all the people were embittered, each one because of his sons and his daughters. Now we see the words, David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. At the end of this verse, you see a verse that has served as the basis for many sermons and is still beneficial to us today. Whether pursued by Saul, imprisoned by the Philistines if they can capture him, fleeing Absalom, or hiding in the wilderness of Judah, David often composed psalms that express trust in God. praise for God and confidence in God. Now we see the words, David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. David's faith in God allowed him to face the crisis. May ours do likewise when we're faced with difficulty. Verse 7 to 10, David turns to Abiathar the priest and asks him to inquire of God whether or not to go after the Amalekites. The priest says, sure, you and your men should go and you'll rescue everyone. David and his 600 men gather their stuff together and they pursue the Amalekites. But they've gone to the brook of Bezor, I think it says, in verse 10. David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 who were too exhausted to cross the brook of Bezor remained behind. They've just traveled a good distance from the battlefield where the Philistines are facing the Israelites. One writer suggested that the distance was maybe a three-day journey of about 70 miles to get back down to Ziklag. They're finding everything burned, their families taken, and now they're going to pursue them. And 200 of the men run out of energy and are left there at the brook of Bezor, probably to also guard some of the accumulated gear that the other 400 just don't want to carry any further. So David and 400 men press on in pursuit of the Amalekites. In verse 11 to 15, we see David's men find an Egyptian servant of an Amalekite who was left behind because he fell sick 3 days earlier. When they bring him to David, David gave him bread and fig cakes and raisins and water. And when he revives him, the man asks for safety. And David agrees. And the man tells him the path of the Amalekites. They've raided the Cherethites, who were a tribe of the Philistines who lived in the southwest part of Canaan. And the Amalekites had also raided in southern Judah, the Negev of Caleb, and burned Ziklag with fire. When David asks this Egyptian for help, he agrees. In verse 15, the last two lines, swear to me by God that you will not kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master. I'll bring you down to this band. So David agrees. He's got a guide. What better way to find him? So in verse 16, we read, when he brought him down, behold, they were spread over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. As you look at this, David's men have been traveling a good time. So, you know, 3 days probably to get back to Ziklag, and then they've got the massive emotional disappointment. Now they're trying to destroy the Amalekites and take home their loved ones. And they find these Amalekites celebrating their raids with drinking and dancing and eating. The Amalekites think they're safe. So David slaughtered them from the twilight unto the evening of the next day, and not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. At dark one day, David starts the attack. They kill these people all through the night. They kill them all through the next day until the only ones that escape are some that find some camels that they can ride and get out of town on. They killed everyone except 400. But don't you know that there was great joy in being able to rescue their loved ones? The result was that David and his men recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, and David had rescued his two wives. Verses 19 and 20 say, but nothing of theirs was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that they had taken for themselves. David brought it all back. So David had captured all the sheep and the cattle which the people drove ahead of the other livestock. And they said, this is David's spoil. When you look at the next verses, there's some disagreement going to happen. When they, on the way back, they meet up with those 200 men that had stayed by the brook of Bezor, and an argument arose because some of the wicked and worthless men that had gone on with David did not want to share the spoil with those that had stayed behind, except to give them their wife and their children. David wouldn't have any of that. Issued a ruling which became part of Israelite military law that those who guarded the baggage in war would receive equal shares of the spoils with those who actually fought. Look at verse 25. So it has been from this day forward that he made a statute and ordinance for Israel to this day. David was fair. He took care of the people. Remember, in just a short time previously, what were things like for David? They were ready to stone David. But he led his men to try to recover everything the Amalekites had taken. And then on the way back, some of his men have a disagreement over what to share. David settles that argument. David was fair. As we get to verse 26, when David got back to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoils to the various towns throughout Judah. The list indicates all these places were in the south of Israel. This is, at the very minimum, a really good diplomatic move. David was positioning himself to be elevated to the kingship by his native tribe of Judah immediately after Saul dies. You know, he's not challenging Saul at the moment, but this is a good diplomatic move. In chapter 31, in this final chapter, we see the Philistines killed many of the Israelites who fled the Philistine attack on Mount Gilboa. Verse 2 says, the Philistines caught up with Saul and his sons, and they kill him. They kill Saul, they kill his sons. The Philistine archers, they kill the two sons. The Philistine archers badly wound Saul. Not wanting to be captured by the Philistines, he asks his armor bearer to take a sword and kill him. The armor bearer refuses. So Saul takes his sword and falls on it, killing himself. Seeing Saul dead, the armor bearer killed himself. So Saul and his sons and the armor bearer all died the same day. If you look at the screen, interestingly, 1 Chronicles 10, 13, 14 says, so Saul died for his trespass which he committed against the Lord, because of the word of the Lord which he did not keep, and also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it, and did not inquire of the Lord. Therefore he killed him and turned the kingdom to David, the son of Jesse. In these last few verses, we're going to see Bethshan up there to your far right, and Jabesh-Gilead mentioned. So, as we get to verse 7 to 13, as the chapter continues, there's activity on Mount Gilboa, Bethshan, and the men of Jabesh-Gilead. In verse 7, the Philistines win the battle as the Israelites flee. The Philistines find the body of Saul and his three sons. They decapitate Saul. They take his weapons and send those to Philistia. Verse 10 says they put his weapons in the temple of Ashtaroth and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. That's pretty strong. Verses 11 to 13 say, now when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose and walked all night and took the body of Saul and the body of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, and they came to Jabesh and burned them there. They took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. And so Saul's reign ended. What comments would you like to make over these chapters? Thank you for participating in 1 Samuel. Again, Sunday, Grant will begin 2 Samuel.